May it please the court, again.
It's good to see you again, Ms.
Well, just wait, I'll be back later. counsel, good morning, Your Honors, again. I represent the appellant, Mr. Worthen, in this case, and we have similar issues in this case. I'd like to first address the appeal waiver because that actually is an issue that Mr. Worthen has that my last case today does not have. The appeal waiver, in our view,
Are you seeking to withdraw your plea?
That will probably be the ultimate result. I know that the case law on this is not really clear, but in the one case that really addresses this, United States versus Gibson, that defendant actually did withdraw his plea. Mr. Worthen is aware of that result and is aware of that remedy. So because our argument is that Hobbs Act robbery cannot sustain a 924J conviction, the 924J conviction and the sentence is illegal, so shall therefore be vacated.
If the plea agreement has to be vacated, if you succeed here, the government's free to reinstate the other counts in the indictment, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Mr. Worthen understands that risk. As it stands now, he's serving 60 years in prison. And so it's a little bit of a toss-up of how much worse it could get for him, which 60 years will essentially be a life sentence for him, despite the fact he's very young.
Say it again.
60 years will likely be a life sentence for someone. He's in a USP, a penitentiary. His life expectancy, therefore, is lower. So it's likely that no matter what, it is a life sentence. So he understands the possibility in this case of an adverse outcome.
Now, what is the max sentence he'd face if the government reinstated 2 and 4? Counts 2 and 4.
I believe they're 20 years apiece, and then there's 4 is 10 years. So it's 20 years and then 10 years. 4 is 922U. I believe that's a 10-year. So it's a 30-year max rather than 60. If we're successful in our 924J argument, of course. Regarding the 924J argument, it of course refers to 924C, so it's essentially the same argument. The underlying offense is Hobbs Act robbery. And first we evaluated the elements clause under subsection C3A, 924C3A, which requires that the conviction have as an element the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against person or property. We're arguing that Hobbs Act robbery is broader than that, and has been interpreted by this court and many other courts to be broader than that, to include fear of injury, including fear of injury to reputation, which would not be the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against the person or property of another. The Fourth Circuit agreed in Torres Miguel about that issue. Torres Miguel's physical injury versus force. I meant to say Arena versus Ayazi held that it can be injury to reputation or the right to conduct a lawful business. The Fourth Circuit and the Second Circuit have held that robbery isn't a crime of violence under 924C3A, although the Second Circuit's Jones case, which held that, has been questioned in its subsequent Hill case, which was recently decided. It is our view that robbery does not qualify categorically, Hobbs Act robbery categorically, because it has been interpreted very broadly by this court. And when you look at the elements of robbery, it does not contain an element of the use of physical force. The robbery elements in Hobbs Act are that the defendant obtained money from a victim, that he did so by means of robbery, the victim parted with the money because of the robbery, and it affected interstate commerce. That then goes down to define robbery as an unlawful taking from a person against his will. that portion is what distinguishes robbery from extortion. So extortion requires that the victim gives consent for the property to be taken, whereas in robbery it's against the victim's will. Then as we argue after Mathis, and this was another case that straddled the Mathis decision. I filed the brief prior to Mathis being filed and then filed my reply brief after Mathis. So that changed the analysis a little bit, I believe, in our favor when we're talking about means. The Hobbs Act robbery actually says by means of and gives a list: actual threatened force or violence, fear of injury to person or property, either person self or person of another. Those, we believe, fall under the Mathis rubric of a list of means rather than a list of elements. If you look just at the elements, there is no violence there. So we believe that it does not qualify under the elements clause of 924C3A. Now, there have been some statements and findings by other court that robbery always qualifies as a crime of violence, and I believe that that is too broad and bleeds into what is the residual clause analysis for a, quote, ordinary case. So they're treating robbery as the, quote, ordinary case, which is from James versus United States, the Supreme Court case from the year that I don't remember, that described how to apply the residual clause, looking to what an ordinary case is. That language was specifically questioned in Johnson, with the 2015 Johnson case, and one of the reasons that the language was found to be vague and unconstitutionally vague. Now, since it doesn't qualify under the elements prong, we also are arguing that it doesn't qualify under the residual clause. This issue, as was argued by the prior attorney right before me, is constantly changing. I feel like I have daily alerts about residual clause and Johnson and what's being struck and what's being not. In this circuit, of course, the ACC's residual clause has been struck. 16B's residual clause has been struck. Career offender residual clause after Hurlburt has been struck from the statute. And what's lingering here is 924C's residual clause, which is language identical to 16B. We see no distinguishing with any, you know, important distinguishing between C3B and 924C and 16B. The government argues that because 924C is a sentencing statute, or is not a sentencing statute, that it does not qualify. However, the vagueness doctrine does not simply apply to the type of statute. It applies to the language, and the language being the same. The Solicitor General conceded in Johnson briefing, the 2015 Johnson, that 924's residual clause was substantially similar to the Armed Criminal Act. Therefore, Mr. Worthen's 924J conviction is not based on a crime of violence as defined in 924C, and therefore that conviction should be vacated and remanded for resentencing. Unless the court has any questions, I'll save the rest of my time. Thank you.
Your Honors, may it please the court, Bob Wood on behalf of the government. I'd like to start picking up on something the appellant said. She said that the Second Circuit and Fourth Circuit have held that Hobbs Act robbery is not a crime of violence. The Fourth Circuit case is one that was discussed a lot in the government's brief, Torres-Miguel. Obviously, this court recently in Waters disagreed with that reasoning. The Fourth Circuit itself has said that it's probably overruled at this point. The Second Circuit case, Jones, not only has been criticized by a Second Circuit's recent decision in Hill, but also that decision's been vacated and withdrawn from the Federal Reporter. So I can't imagine that it would be good precedent at this point. It's not on Westlaw or anything. So really there are no cases that I think are still viable that have held that Hobbs Act robbery is not a crime of violence. In fact, the real weight of caseload is when you look at whether courts have said that Hobbs Act robbery, whether or not Hobbs Act robbery has an element that is a force element. And courts have said that for years. And courts have been saying that
What do you do with this argument that that the Hobbs Act does really involve damage to reputation, damage to ability to run a business.
Sure. A couple of things. First, the cases that the appellant cites on that point were Hobbs Act extortion cases, not Hobbs Act robbery cases. And so I don't think it really speaks to Hobbs Act, to the elements of Hobbs Act robbery. Extortion is a more difficult to prove crime. It's got different elements. So to the extent that the court is supposed to look at whether or not there's any realistic probability or possibility that there would be a prosecution for Hobbs Act robbery for that sort of thing, there may be, but there are no cases that I'm aware of where that's happened. And on that point, I would point the court to this court's recent decision in Duncan, where the panel explained that the kind of ordinary case that you have to look to, it really should exclude a hypothetical like that. And also, the second point on this is, I didn't want to make too much of this because I do think that something, either Johnson 1, the 2010 Johnson's definition of physical force does apply here, or something close to it applies. The difference, of course, is that decision didn't cover property, because property is something that's different about the force clause in this case than in the ACCA. And if the Supreme Court or this court were to confront how force works with respect to property, I'm not sure that the definition that Johnson 1 supplies of simple injury or pain would be immediately workable. There would have to be some kind of wrestling with whether and to what extent. I'm sure that Johnson 1 would provide a really nice foundation for the meaning of physical force in 924C3A, but it probably wouldn't be exactly the same because of the property component. And I say that in response to Your Honor's question about reputation, because there are these hypothetical possibilities about threats to intangible property. But again, none of those is, in the research I've done, none of those is apparent in case law, certainly not the ordinary case. So I guess that's my twofold response to that question. The second thing I'd like to respond to, yes, Your Honor.
Talk to you about, because in another appeal we will be hearing today, and that's the last case today, mm-hmm. The government conceded that, or I think they did, that Hobbs Act robbery is defined by Section 1951B1 is an indivisible statute. Yet
yes.
It seemed to me to suggest in your brief that it may be divisible into robberies committed by actual or threatened force and those committed by fear of injury. Under Mathis, these are means of committing the crime, not different elements of it, are they not?
Your Honor, I would readily concede that the space that I gave to that in the brief reflects the strength I see in the argument. I think that it's possible under Mathis that Hobbs Act robbery is divisible, but the entirety of the argument is categorical. Oh, I'm sorry.
It should be analyzed under the categorical approach?
Absolutely. The entirety of the argument in the brief, save those couple of sentences, is under the categorical approach. And just to be clear, there were, when I filed this brief, a couple of different offices around the country had taken slightly different viewpoints on this, and I, more than anything, to be quite honest, wanted not to forego the argument. I think that it doesn't really matter in the end. Categorically, Hobbs Act robbery always has a force element. Many courts have said that for many years, so whether Mathis applies or not, I think you can just look at the 11th Circuit's decision right before Mathis in St. Fleur, where they said that Hobbs Act robbery has a force element and said it's therefore a crime of violence under subsection A, and then right after Mathis, applying Mathis, the Second Circuit and Hill said the same thing and that Mathis didn't matter to the analysis. That's really...
Well, how use of force is an element of Hobbs Act robbery as opposed to one of the means of committing it?
Well, I just start by reiterating that courts have said for years that including this court, and I mean it's not in my brief, but in the Villegas case, said that force is an element of Hobbs Act robbery from 2011. And I'm happy to, of course, provide that decision to the court in a letter. But also, if you take out the force element, Hobbs Act robbery becomes theft. And pickpocketing would qualify. And I don't think any court would accept that Hobbs Act robbery covers that kind of a prosecution. So even though I really do agree with Your Honor's suggestion that this strange disjunctive list doesn't look like what we're used to as an element of a crime, courts have routinely over the years said Hobbs Act robbery, just you're not going to survive a sufficiency challenge if you don't have force. And the best way perhaps to articulate that force, again, I might look at this court's recent decision in Duncan, where the court said, you know, in the least of these, in the fear context, the fear is fear of injury, and that injury equates right back to the way that the Supreme Court articulated force in Johnson 1 as something capable of causing an injury. And so, and also you can just look at it in the terms of this court's jury instructions. The court says the elements that the government has to establish include taking by means of robbery. Of course, robbery is called a means in that formulation, but I don't think anyone would say that it is a means and not an element. It is, of course, an element. So the words don't have talismanic value, and I don't think Mathis said they did. And then, of course, robbery needs a meaning, so the jury instructions go on to provide that meaning, and a necessary showing, the government always has to show one of those things: force, threatened force, violence, or fear of injury. And that fear of injury, as again numerous courts have explained, is fear of injury from the use of physical force, which again, as this court's recent decision in Duncan held, is the same thing as force under Johnson 1.
This issue with regard to Hobbs is before the Supreme Court now, isn't it?
If it is, Your Honor, I apologize. I'm unaware of a cert grant on the Hobbs Act. It is?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I apologize, Your Honor. No, you know more about it. I didn't see that.
It's just not decided.
Right. Okay. And, you know, I'm also happy. Oh, I'm sorry. I see I'm
out of time. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to briefly respond to Your Honor's note about the residual clause issue. I was just going to say I'm happy, given time limitations, to defer to the next argument on that, so it's really a non-issue. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I think to answer your last question, I'm not sure Hobbs Act robbery is before the Supreme Court. DiMaia is before the Supreme Court, and that's 16B. And Beckles is before the Supreme Court, and that's the career offender.
DiMaia.
Yeah, DiMaia, I believe, is a 16B issue.
16B.
Not a Hobbs Act issue. Or not a 924C/Hobbs Act issue. I don't think 924C is there yet.
No, it's 16B.
Yeah. So when I said Torres Miguel, I actually meant to refer to Gardner, which is the Fourth Circuit case, and I apologize. That did hold that the North Carolina robbery was not a crime of violence. And Jones may have been withheld, but courts of appeals are withholding a lot of cases based on the grant in Beckles and DiMaia. And I think the analysis in Jones, because Jones interpreted a New York statute that served as the basis for the Hobbs Act, is credible here, despite the fact that the opinion has now been withdrawn, that it may in fact be resurrected after whatever they're waiting for, DiMaia or Beckles. I can't remember which one. The cases that I cite in my brief about injury to reputation are not just extortion cases. And extortion cases, while being different, they do require the consent of victim, and that's the primary difference between the two in the Hobbs Act robbery. Hobbs Act robbery is a very interesting statute. It's very interestingly worded, and we believe falls within the Mathis analysis of elements versus means. I think the courts are going towards upholding both Hobbs Act robbery as a crime of violence and 924C as not vacating the residual clause. Supreme Court has said over and over again, and in And in Mathis, expressed frustration with telling lower courts, no, this is what we mean. And I think that means that's what they mean, and we need to work with Mathis. And Hobbs Act robbery falls within that Mathis framework. So unless the court has further questions, I'll be back in a couple cases to talk about it again.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.